Welcome to Kinfolk Lore. We're excited to be back to share our love for some of our favorite stories. This season, we'll be exploring the politics of one of our most beloved fantasy worlds. We're going to Westeros to cover House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and our returning listeners will know that we're cousins who started this podcast because we love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've covered His Dark Materials, we've tossed a coin to our Witcher, we've covered Avatar: The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, and Lovecraft Country, and we've loved every moment of it. We're excited. Excited is almost not even the word. To dive into the larger canon of A Song of Ice and Fire and learn about the history of this expansive world.
This week, we're looking at the history of Westeros, and we'll be setting a bit more context for this story by discussing two of the kings that reigned before Viserys I, King Maegar and King Jaehaerys. There will be spoilers for the Fire and Blood book, but also there will be spoilers for the larger Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire canon. And we are going to stop short of discussing anything that we believe House of the Dragon will pick up on in terms of the history of the Targaryen dynasty. So we will not be talking much about Viserys I. We'll just be talking about two of his predecessors.
But you know what we're not going to stop short of? Giving you adult content. That's right. Kinfolklore will have it. And if you're here for stories of a son who would not be outdone by his father. Oh, you wrote two dragons, sister wives? Okay, cool, that's fine. No sisters on my behalf. My name's Maegor the Cruel. I'll take six wives. Six wives it is.
Mess. Just a total mess.
Here we go. It's a real mess.
So while Maegor is just the third Targaryen king, he's important for a few reasons. His reign demonstrates the early, very early succession issues. This is literally Aegon's son. This is one generation. And there are already issues with the succession. And in addition, he's extremely cruel and erratic during his reign, which traumatized a lot of the Westerosi lords and also the small folk. Maegor and his nephew Aegon battled in probably what was Westeros' first dragon-on-dragon fight. And we'll talk a bit more about that later.
I mean, It was like a first-round knockout. It was quick. It was like Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson in the 80s, knocking people out. It's not really a fight. You're extremely kind to call it one.
Okay, but yeah. It was not really a fight.
Oh, but so quick.
Aegon tried.
He did, but Beleriand the Dread ate his dragon in 2 seconds. It was quick. it's really the first time we've ever seen a dragon fight, and it was not a fight. We were like, damn, that's it? All right, cool.
So when I said we were going to talk about it later, we meant right now.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I just can't classify it as a fight. When it was that quick, I was like, I hope the dance is better than this. This is early in the books. I'm like, man, the dance has to be more. The fights do get better. They do.
So let's talk a brief history of the first conflict of succession and Maegor's reign. So Maegor was Aegon the Conqueror's second son and the only child he had by his sister wife. I'm just going to have to come to some kind of understanding with myself when I say this.
We're back. We're back. We're back in the land of incest. This is it. This is like they made it popular. It's like crazy. I don't know. It's weird.
This is hard. So his sister wife, Visenya. Aegon had an older son by his wife / sister, Rhaenys, who perished during the conquest. And his older son's name was Aenys. I'm going to go with Aenys. It would just be easier for me to get through this without laughing. I'm just going to go with Aenys. So Aenys reigned for 5 years, and his time as king was marred by conflict. But the biggest conflict came when his two eldest children, Rhaena and Aegon, got married. The Faith of the Seven, which is not really something the Targaryens rocked with, but Aegon decided to make it a thing. does not accept this. Mm. And there was an uprising by the Warrior Sons, which are part of the Faith Militant. You will remember the Faith Militant from Game of Thrones.
Yes, it's Cersei blowing up the Sept. Where's Cersei when you need her? You know, like, just like, let's go. And you don't need Cersei for much. But the one thing she would have done is helped them out in this case.
It's true. I mean, I actually, at many points in Fire and Blood, agreed with the Faith Militant. It's just me. several times where I was like, they kind of have a point. So Aenys died when Rhaena and Aegon were besieged during their progress throughout the Seven Kingdoms. Just died. It's speculated that his auntie / stepmother, Visenya, you know, may have poisoned him, but he just collapsed. He never recovered.
It was too much. It was too much for him. It was too much for him to bear the idea that his children were going to be killed because of a decision that he let happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, he wasn't like the man of the strongest constitution.
No, he was terrible. In fact, it was rumored that he wasn't even Aegon's son biologically, because they tried to say that his youngest sister loved the poets and the singers, and he was so sickly early in his life that they thought, well, maybe it was a kid from one of the poets or the singers. It wasn't really couldn't be Aegon the Conqueror's son. But, you know, then he got strong and he started getting stronger and a better fighter, and then people believed it. But it was a while where they even they basically questioned his paternity.
Yeah. I mean, they questioned everything with these folks.
100%.
Yeah. It's just like everything has a question. And that's the thing about Fire and Blood. Nothing is definitive. I shouldn't say nothing. Very few things are definitive. Sometimes people die and then they pop up years later. Sometimes their manner in death is not clear. Sometimes, you know, a reason for why something happened is unclear. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to spend any more time on Aenys. Let's move on. He died. His brother Maegor had been exiled in Essos, and his mother got on her dragon, got her son, and brought him back so that he could claim the throne, even though his nephew, Aegon, would have been first in line for the throne.
Mm-hmm. She did try to ask him about succession, like she did early. Like you
she
said.
Did. She did come with like a, you know, why doesn't Maegor marry Rhaena? And then, we'll lock up this succession thing. She tried. But, you know, in the end, she just decided, I'm going to go snatch up my son from Essos, bring him back, and we'll just claim the throne because there's no one else here to claim it.
Well, it's probably good that they didn't do that with Rhaena at first, because let's be honest, Maegor was shooting blanks. Okay. He had no children. None. He was cursed by the gods.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk more about how he deals with the fact that he's unable to have children later.
Yeah,
but
it was rough. I'm glad Rhaena didn't have to go through that early. Anyway, major events of Maegor's rule were that the first thing Maegor does is he murders the Maesters who protested that he was not the heir. So they basically said, you know what, it should be Aegon, the son, and he was like, nah. And then when the Maester disagreed with them, he killed him in pretty public fashion. And the next thing he does is he flies to King's Landing on his mother's dragon, Balerion the Black Dread, and challenges the Warrior Sons to a fight. He also took major action in getting married. And that was not, you know, normally people get married because they want to be able to have like children and then have the line continue when you're talking about the, royal dynasties. But the problem here is that the guy already had not one, but two wives. So he was married to Cerys Hightower. And when she didn't have any kids, he married Alys Harroway. And then after that, Queen Alys befriends a woman while they're exiled in Pentos named Tyana, and that becomes his third wife.
Just messy. How are you going to marry your wife's friend? It's just, this whole thing is messy. Maegor was messy.
He was just marrying everybody. I mean, why did he get exiled? Why did he get exiled to Pentos?
I'm pretty sure he got exiled for marrying Alys.
Yeah, exactly. Because he already had a wife, and they were like, his brother was like, dude, the faith is going to kill us. You can't marry somebody else. Like, and then he's like, oh, fuck it. while we're over here, Petos, why are we throwing another wife, your best friend? You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy. This motherfucker's nuts. So using Beleriand, he also burns up a bunch of warrior sons in battles near King's Landing, and then turns towards Old Town and threatens the High Septon. He's like, I don't care about your faith. I got dragons. Fair point. I don't know why somebody didn't say this earlier, but, you know, listen, they needed to make their point about the marrying of siblings and succession and everything else, so he made his point with Dragonfire. He also made his point when he learns that his nephew Aegon, remember him? We were talking about him earlier.
basically, no, I forgot about him already.
I know, but this guy decides Aegon, after he was under siege and, like, you know, his dad died because he was worried about his safety. He decides, you know what? I flipped this around now. I've gained support. Let me go ahead and get a bunch of the lords who do support me in Westeros to go ahead and ride in the battle so we can take this throne back from my crazy uncle. This is known as the Battle Beneath the God's Eye, and the event leads to Maegor being labeled as the Cruel because he kills his nephew pretty instantly with Beleriand the Black Dread. It's done. It's really quick, and there's even a description where, you know, Beleriand the Black Dread basically, like, bites into the neck of his dragon, and, you know, when they crash to the ground, he's thrown from the dragon and dies, and it's a mess. But it was fast. And then he takes his brother's wife, the Dowager Queen, Alyssa, and her two younger children, Jaehaerys and Alysanne, and imprisons them in Dragonstone. This will become important later. And then also takes Viserys, not Viserys the First, who will be later on named after, you know, in a line of people who are named Viserys. But he takes Viserys, this particular one, as his cupbearer. He was the eldest son of Aenys and Alyssa.
Well, now the eldest son because Aegon is dead.
Yeah. Now the eldest son because, you know, Aegon is Michael Spinks. And when he fought Mike Tyson, that's an old reference, but look it up. It's on YouTube. Anyway, I've been watching a lot of Mike Tyson fight videos. So the cupbearer is Viserys. And he does that because he wants to make sure that if Alyssa, Jaehaerys, and Alysanne decide to flee, that he'll have him almost as a ward. Like, hey, I got your son. I'll kill him if you do anything.
A ward is a very nice way for saying hostage.
Yeah, he's a hostage. Exactly. It's extremely nice way to say hostage.
He's basically like Theon Greyjoy, except not as well treated.
100%. So I said a lot, but I just want you to know, anyone who's listening, we haven't even gotten to the crazy stuff yet. This is just early. So Maegor's second wife, Queen Alys, goes into premature labor and delivers a baby with birth defects. He has all the midwives, every last person who was in the room helping with the baby, all the nurses, anyone. He has them all killed. He then learns from Tyanna, who basically turns on her friend because she's like getting jealous at this point and wants to be the one, tells him that Alys was sleeping with other men and an attempt to get pregnant because she could not get pregnant from him. He then has Alys tortured and murders her entire family.
The entire family gets wiped out.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, talk about an overreaction. What did they have to do with anything?
It's crazy. It's nuts. It's wild to see that he kills the whole family. And it's also wild that, I mean, he's killing people because he can't, like, literally it's his problem. If there's six women, six, but you're the same in the equation every single time, it can't be the other people. It is you, Maegor. Next, his mother dies on Dragonstone, and the Dowager Queen.
Listen, we got to take a moment for Visenya. We don't always agree with her, but she was a real one out here with her son, right?
I'm like, I miss the old Visenya. Like, I miss the old Kanye. I'm taking Visenya when they conquered all the way up until the first Dornish War and her establishing the Kingsguard. I don't know after that. It gets a little dicey for me.
All right, let's just go through Visenya. So Visenya should have married her brother and been queen in her own right by family tradition.
Sure.
Which, again, I cannot believe that I'm saying these words without any irony.
This is true.
And her brother's like, cool, I'll marry you, but I also have to marry the sister I like more.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the first insult, right? But she loves her sister, so they make it work. Then her sister has a kid first, which puts her child in front of Visenya's in terms of being the heir. Then mm-hmm. Visenya says, okay, can we try for some equity here? Can I at least marry my son to your eldest daughter? Who, again, this is probably like the first time that they skipped over the oldest child who was a girl to be queen, right? And moved right to the son who was born after her. But, mm-hmm. she, you know, Visenya was like, okay, you know, your oldest daughter is a girl. Your oldest child is a girl. Why don't we have her marry my son? And then this will be a little bit fair. They're like, nah, we want her to marry her brother instead. So even though I don't agree with Visenya, I understand her grievances here.
But there was a reason why. I mean, there's a reason why, besides Maegor's cruelty, before we even get to Maegor's cruelty, one of the reasons why is because they didn't really spend a lot of time together. Maegor and Rhaena didn't have like any real rapport or built up like connection, which is, again, sounds crazy, right? Uncle and niece. But they didn't have any real thing that would, this will play out later where uncle and niece, maybe they do have a rapport. But listen, I'm just saying, like, it makes sense why they didn't want them to marry. You know, I'm with you, though.
I know, but I'm saying from her point of view.
Yeah, yeah.
She's sure. tried to be reasonable multiple times, and they're just kind of like, well, we're the ones in power. Oh, well, you know, take your grievance somewhere else, auntie. I understand her feelings. I'm not saying she's right. I'm just saying I understand it.
I'll give you that. I'll give you, from her point of view, definitely, it didn't feel like they were playing fair, and it felt like they were favorites. Even, like, the Red Keep was given to her as a project so that he didn't have to spend as much time with her. So, like, it's well documented that that's kind of the way that it rolls. So after Visenya dies, Alyssa manages to escape with her two youngest children and goes into hiding. Maegor's livid, obviously, quite obviously. And so he tortures his nephew, Viserys, and mutilates him to the point that it's terrible, and then puts his mutilated body on display in an effort to basically get, you know, Alyssa to come out of hiding. He wants her to come out so he can, you know, then capture them again. He figures if he, you know, puts her body out, his body out, that Alyssa will want to, you know, recover the body, and that will be his trap. So he's using his nephew. Not only did he kill his nephew, but he's using his nephew as bait, which is crazy. Alyssa wisely doesn't come. But after Maegor's first wife dies, he marries three other young women, including his niece Rhaena against her will. She is the widow of Aegon that he killed, Aegon the Uncrowned. He also married Lady Eleanor Castaigne and Lady Jane Westerling against their will. They became known as the Black Brides. Shortly after, the realm has had enough of his tyranny. It's like getting to be too much. And so in the shadows, Prince Jaehaerys starts a rebellion. Maegor died under interesting circumstances, like kind of like mysterious circumstances. He died on the Iron Throne shortly after a war council about this rebellion. In which it became clear that he had no path to victory. But he died he was found on the Iron Throne with, you know, blades through his wrist. And it looks like there's even some illustrations that the throne is going through his neck. And, it, you know, a lot of the small folk, a lot of the people in the realm said the Iron Throne itself killed Maegor. It's also rumored that it could have been one of his wives that had tired of him and that were forced to marry him. And it also is rumored it could have been one of the builders of the Red Keep, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a minute.
So let's talk a little bit about his legacy. you know, aside from all the murder and...
Oh, that's, I mean, that's kind of his legacy.
Yeah, let's talk about, like, I wouldn't say positive points, but, like, some stuff that's aside from that. Okay. So one thing is that the Faith Militant became really, really powerful in larger numbers during the reigns of both Maegar and his older brother, Aenys. They continued to be, like, a thorn in the side of monarchs, and we see that all the way through Game of Thrones, all the way up to the reign of King Tommen Baratheon, until, you know, King Tommen Baratheon's father, mother, blows up the Sept, so...
And then he yeah, man,
poor Tommen. Yeah. Aw, poor Tommen.
Yeah, that's a rough one. I mean, and to be fair, these guys kind of put the Faith Militant down. I mean, they pop up here and there throughout the history, but people normally get at them and like, yo, you're done. And then it took a special person like Cersei to bring them back.
Sure.
Bring them back for no reason.
In addition to that, the Red Keep, super important set piece, right? That was completed during Maegar's reign.
And started with Aegon asking Visenya to take over the reins, and he completed his mother and father's work by completing it. And, you know, he was so happy that he invited everybody to a feast because it was a momentous occasion. Something that started at the beginning of, like, their reign is now finally completed under him. It's something to celebrate. And he invited all the people that worked on it, all the architects, the builders, structure people. If you worked on it, you were coming. Feast at my house. 3 days, they dined and supped with the king. It was great. And at the end of it, he killed them all. Every last one of them. Maybe, because maybe one of them snuck out. And that's why they say maybe one of the people who were the builders who knew a secret passageway that got out of there before they were all killed. Came back in and killed him, but it's believed that he killed them all, and simply because he didn't want anybody knowing. He had had all these secret passageways and things built into the Red Keep, and he didn't want anyone but him, just him, to know the secrets of the Red Keep. So every last builder, every person who worked on it was killed, and that's why there's a mystery around his death. If how did somebody kill the king, was never found, was able to escape. Could have been that it was a person who escaped being killed at this feast and knew all the passageways of the Red Keep. Could have been a wife, and it could just be if you're more of a, you know, person who believes in, you know, just divine justice, could have been the throne itself because he was such a terrible and cruel ruler.
So if it was a throne, I feel like... I just feel like then my favorite dragon, Drogon, should have given it a pass, right? You didn't have to burn it up then. The throne did us a favor. Like, I know the throne caused a lot of problems, but it took care of some of them. So I'm just saying, Drogon may have acted a little hastily when he burnt up the throne.
It's a different throne anyway, you know?
Like, oh, that's true. Like, that's true. It is,
less swords.
It is a different throne. I wonder if they're going to explain that. It would be interesting if, like, the throne was destroyed or something at the end of the series. I think it would be good to see, to, like, have an explanation for why the throne is different.
Yeah, definitely.
Or maybe they won't comment on it at all. Who knows?
We'll see. We'll see. I think, like, for me, my headcanon is that, like, you know, when Robert came into power, or maybe when another, like, because it doesn't make sense. It makes no, I don't know. Will it have, it has to have changed actually before that, because it has to have changed before Aerys, because Aerys, actually, we see him in front of the same throne when he's stabbed by Jaime. So it has to be Aerys. So yeah, there's got to be some explanation. Maybe, you know, if we ever get the second volume, we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean.
Or maybe it's just Dan and Dave didn't like, you know, to listen to George.
It could be that there'll be a canonical explanation for this. Like, it got replaced during the Blackfyre Rebellion, which is after the Dance of Dragons, or maybe it will have been replaced during the Dance of Dragons. Well, I guess we'll have to see what they come up with. So just getting to Maegar's last part of his legacy here, you know, he was extremely cruel, and the trauma that he inflicted upon the Reign really stayed with folks. In fact, it's, you know, even speculated during Dance that if Daemon Targaryen, who is a major character, who's going to be a major character in the show, got the throne, that he would be similar to Maegar. And that was a convincing argument to some. So it's important to have that context of why Maegar had such an impression on the realm, and why any conflict within the Targaryen family kind of like attracts the interest and in the fear of other Westerosi people, because it's, this war was really horrible and a lot of people suffered.
I mean, could we say that, would you go as far as to say that maybe that's where the idea that, you know, you flip a coin and one Targaryen is going to be like a good ruler and one's going to be like evil and like corrupted. Like, we were saying that there's not a lot of evidence, but to me, Maegor is probably the only evidence we have, but maybe it stained the house so long over the generations, hundreds of years, that people still, the stories still ring true, still ring true to them, because Aenys was, you know, Aenys, Jesus, he gave up both swords to this crazy man. It's pretty crazy. And then Maegor was crazy, you know what I mean? So like, what do you think? Do you think that that's possible, that that's where they, that comes from?
I mean, I think if we include Aegon the Conqueror as being seen by the realm as cruel, then it kind of works out, right? Because he did, a lot of people did die in his conquest, and anyone who didn't bend the knee was subject to dragon fire. Then you have his son Aenys, and he is kind of incompetent, but, you know, otherwise fairly peaceful. He dies, and then his brother takes over, and he's very cruel in a very public way. So I guess up until then, it kind of tracks. I mean, we're going to talk about Jaehaerys next, and he's extremely reasonable. Like,
yeah,
one of the most reasonable Targaryens, period. So, yeah, I guess it kind of tracks up to this point that if you flip a coin, you could land on a good side or a bad side. I'm still just not convinced at the end of this volume, volume one of Fire and Blood, that there's much evidence for, you know, actual like insanity, mental illness. Like, I don't see that here. And that's how I always understood that phrase. But as we talked about last week, perhaps, you know, George R. R. Martin is talking about like just being power hungry.
Yeah, I land where you land on that. I'm just wondering if, like, in world, like, if I was living there, and the stories, you know, like there's stories that just grow over time. Even as bad as this was, it wouldn't need much, you know, embellishment. But things could just keep getting passed down generation after generation after generation, where that just, you know, it's like any little thing proves the point. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. I'm with you though. I land where you land. By the end of this volume, I didn't feel that either. So,
yeah. So let's talk about Jaehaerys.
Yeah.
Who is known as the Old King because he reigned for so long. He is a very important figure to House of the Dragon for a few reasons. You know, it's unlikely that we're going to see Jaehaerys in more than one episode, although it's possible. We have not seen any of the show. But his reign is probably the longest period of relative peace that the Seven Kingdoms experiences. It's important for the following reasons. During his reign, the doctrine of exceptionalism comes up, which is this is sort of an agreement between the Faith and the Targaryens that allows for them to marry their siblings. Yep. Mm-hmm. I said that allows for them to marry. Actually, it's not even just sibling. If you look deeper into it, it's just incest in general is allowed, because like niece and uncle marriages are allowed too. They do not consider cousin marriages to be incest, largely because that was already permitted by the Faith. So this doctrine of exceptionalism says that the Targaryens are not like other men. As they, you know, are dragon riders, and they were the only ones the only dragon riders in the world since the Doom of Valyria. Mm-hmm. And since they're not Andals, but instead Valyrian, their ancestral traditions were different, and they wed brother and sister, as all Valyrians did, and the gods made them this way. So it's not for the men and women of Westeros to judge. Whatever. It was a compromise, right?
Yeah,
the High Septon at the time just, you know, didn't want any more drama over Jaehaerys and his sister wife. And so they just accepted this.
And he kept it pretty secret, right? Like, he kept it under wraps about marrying his sister. And in fact, there was only one person, Septon that would come and do the wedding. Like, so he kept it pretty close to the vest until he could come up with a way to, you know, get it okayed through the faith. And I thought, I think it shows a lot of his ingenuity, but also his ability, political acumen. He really was good at that part of it. Like, okay, this isn't going to play well. Let me see all the angles and let me figure out how to get what I want, but in a way that will still appease all many different factions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a negotiator in some of the best ways. And, you know, next to a lot of his predecessors, but also the kings that come after him, he is very reasonable, even though, you know, he still married his sister. Like, he's still quite reasonable. The other thing that is really, you know, Jaehaerys is known for, which had huge consequences throughout the realm, was the Great Council of 101 AC, which is basically we're not going to go too deep into that because we don't know how much of it or if any of it will be on screen, and we don't want to spoil. Yeah. But it's the event that kind of leads to the conflict that unfolds in House of the Dragon. And then the final thing, like, there's actually, if you're going to read Fire and Blood, I would highly recommend reading the chapters about Jaehaerys, because there's actually a lot in there that he accomplished. Like, some of it's kind of boring, like, just, you know, basic services that the kingdom didn't have before. It's kind of like, you know, municipal stuff that's a little bit more boring. It's not as exciting as dragons fighting. But one reason in particular is it talks about basically what happened with his sister Rhaena. Remember her? She married their brother. She also had two daughters. And so Rhaena, during her time at Dragonstone, which she actually had to fight to get. And again, here's another mm-hmm. time when an older girl being passed over for her third youngest brother. Mm-hmm. Three dragon eggs are stolen from Rhaena at Dragonstone by her lover, Lady Alyssa Farman. And those dragon eggs, are taken across the Narrow Sea. They land with a sea lord and Braavos for a while. Like, they're, you know, they're kind of bouncing around being sold to the highest bidder. Jaehaerys tried to get the dragon eggs back and failed. But we believe that these are the eggs that landed right back into the hands of Daenerys Targaryen.
I feel that so much. I really hope that is the case. You know what I mean? Like, I hope one day that they'll confirm that, but that is, it just makes so much sense.
I think the only way to confirm it is to definitively know where Illyrio got the eggs and where the mm-hmm. person before him got them. But I think that these are her. I think this is, you know, little Drogon, Viserion, and Rhaegal in their little eggs. So those are, you know, some of the important things that happened during Jaehaerys' reign, although this one is not quite connected to the House of the Dragon. I just thought it was a cool fact.
Yeah, for sure. I thought it so much. I remember us talking on the phone after we had read that part of the book, and we went back and forth, like, thinking about it. And I mean, all the stuff with Alyssa Farman and Rhaena is really interesting.
Rhaena deserves her own show.
Yeah.
I think Rhaena is one of the most interesting Targaryens. She is, I wouldn't quite say openly queer, but she is she is really only interested in women. I think she married her brother largely because she wanted to reign next alongside him, but like she wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think there was any other attraction there. And her story is very, very, very interesting. I think it's worth a read. It takes up between the Maegar chapters and the chapters about Jaehaerys, she takes up a significant amount of ink, and she's a very compelling character in my opinion.
Yeah, rightfully so. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there, we don't want to spoil too much of the book. We give you like the backstory so that you can understand like a lot of the events going into the show. But that, I agree. I think Rhaena's story, all the stuff with Alyssa Farman, with House Farman, all that stuff that plays out later too. Throughout the reign of Jaehaerys. So there's a lot of interesting stuff. And then his major events of Jaehaerys' reign. He was the youngest son of Aenys and Alyssa. Alyssa being Alyssa Valerian. He married his younger sister, Alysanne. Jaehaerys and Alysanne spent most of their first years of their marriage at Dragonstone. They basically wanted to conceal the marriage, as we mentioned earlier, because they feared the reaction of the Faith Militant, and they were essentially, you know, inseparable aside from when matters of court kept them separated and the two or during two moments of major quarrel that they had over their daughters and later their granddaughters. In King's Landing, there was also Lord Rhaegar Baratheon and the Dowager Queen Alyssa, who ruled as the Lord Protector since Jaehaerys was only 14 years old when he took taking the throne. And then the hand and the Dowager soon also got married, which was a little bit, the realm I think thought he was overstepping himself a little bit there by doing that. And they plotted many to how they could undo the wedding, how they could get Jaehaerys and Alysanne to not be together anymore. This eventually, led to a falling out between Alyssa and Rhaegar Baratheon.
And she fired him.
He was fired. Yeah, she gave him the boot. She's like, fired. You're fired.
She was like, yeah. You know what? He tried to like replace Jaehaerys on the throne, and she was like, this is not cool. It's one thing to ask them to dissolve their marriage, which, you know, was because Alysanne was very young. You know, they were not really living as husband and wife anyway. So I think that would have been preferable to their mom, is that they just dissolved the marriage, pretend it never happened. He was like, no, let's put another Targaryen on the throne. And she was like, okay, no. You can leave.
Yeah, Rhaegar and Jaehaerys have a complicated, very complicated relationship throughout the time that he's alive and in the reign. And there's a lot there that could also be. I really do think that if they do make this like kind of like a serial kind of like different kind of shows, I think that you could go from, you could actually get a long show with the conquest and the first Maegor, all the Maegor stuff. And actually lead up to like Jaehaerys like and Alysanne like bringing the realm into some semblance of order and all that. That would give you enough to like be between that and lead into whatever we're gonna get with House of the Dragon. That's you know, obviously I don't think that's the next show you make, but I think there is a show there. You know what I mean? We would include all the Rhaena stuff and everything. But anyway, I mean, what do you think? Do you think that that would be a decent kind of like show to watch?
Yeah, it's a little tricky because of the timing. I kind of feel like they're dropping us into the Dance of the Dragons, and then I think they have to make a choice to go forward or to go back. And if they're gonna go back ever, then I think they should go back right away.
Yeah.
I just think it makes more sense. It doesn't make sense to me to do the Blackfyre Rebellion and then go back in time after that. But who knows? I mean, listen, I'm not on a creative team here. I don't work at HBO, so I don't know what their play is. But I think all of these are pretty fascinating stories. I mean, this is the thing about George R. R. Martin. Despite the fact that I am very salty with him for the way that he named all these characters, I don't know if I can get over that. And I'm also salty at him because I've been waiting for Winds of Winter for years. He writes compelling narratives about these people. A lot of the characters feel real. You understand their motivations. And there's like very little dialogue in this book. Like, this is mostly a straight telling. So I think no matter where they go, there's a lot to do here, because all of the Targaryens are really interesting. But I think they're going to have to make a choice about which way they're taking the story, if they continue, you know, to use the House of the Dragon as like a brand for Targaryen stories.
Yeah, I hear that. I definitely hear that. And I mean, George, man, there's very few. My partner, she was like, she ran out and she came into the kitchen thinking I was going crazy, because I'm listening to the book as I'm doing things in the kitchen, and it gets to parts in the book and I'm just like yelling. I'm like, damn, George can write that shit. And she's like, what the fuck is going on in here? Like, I'm like yelling, because I'm just like, damn, this guy is just so good. He's such a, there's no accident that we're all so drawn to this world. And the book is just, again, it's like, I was thinking about what you said last week when you were saying that this is the best kind of writing or book to kind of do a show from, because there's like different accounts and it's not all told like in like a way where you're in the head of the character. And I felt like, man, this is like a long treatment for so many different movies, shows. It's like when you're writing a show and you're writing a movie and you write the long form treatment just to get the idea out of your head. But it's like deeper than that. It's a treatment with like a lot, there's tons of lines, lots of things colored in. I really appreciate the way that this is written.
Yeah, so. I was surprised. I think I said that last week in reading this, just how smoothly and how easy it is to read and how engaging it is. It gets you, it grabs you in certain points and you can't put it down.
Yeah, so I mean, eventually, To close out some of the things that, you know, Jaehaerys had as events in his life. We spoke about him making and brokering a deal with the faith through the doctrine of exceptionalism. He also had a long reign. Long, long reign. It's a 50-year reign. And, you know, aside from, like, plagues that broke out, which was a little bit much for me to go through, but, you know, for obvious reasons, at the beginning of his reign and a Dornish invasion of the Stormlands towards the end, it was relatively peaceful. And, you know, it was, however, one of those reigns that was marred by tragedy. I mean, look no further than the fact that out of 13 children, that none of his children took the throne. None of their children took the throne. They're, you know, one of their children's, you know, son took the throne, but none of their children actually lived to take the throne. Or if they were alive, they were unable to take the throne, which we won't, you know, spoil what that is, because that may even come into the play in the show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a real rough thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're being a little bit careful about talking about the kids, because we don't know what's going to be used in the show and what won't. Because certainly at the Great Council, a lot of Targaryens popped up that no one had thought about before.
Random.
Just random Targaryens showed up. Yeah. So I just to say this, in case the show doesn't cover it, to me, in reading about Alysanne and Jaehaerys, what I was struck by is how difficult it was for them to raise their daughters. There's multiple tragic stories about what happened to their daughters, especially, and in their falling outs when they were fighting with each other. It was mainly because Alysanne, who was as much a feminist as you could have in this story, didn't understand why her granddaughter and her daughter were immediately passed over in the line succession. She just couldn't grapple with like why this was happening. She thought that in part because she ruled alongside her husband and was a very shrewd politician. She just didn't understand the notion that women couldn't rule. And so I think that, again, another sort of plug for the book, there's some nuance there about their relationship and the frustration that she felt about how their daughters were treated by him and by society at large, but also the reason, you know, what was, she never got an answer. What was the reason that women couldn't rule?
Yeah. And to add on to that, she probably, if I'm thinking through her lens, thought that she had laid a lot of the groundwork for that to not be the case. She had traveled to many different places with, you know, Jaehaerys, and also without him, even as far as the north, to like really lay the groundwork for, like, you know, a lot of customs and changes. And one of the things I thought that was profound that it really touched me is that, you know, I said last week she listened to the people, to the small folk and everyone everywhere she went. But to be more specific, when she landed, she wanted to go meet with the women who were part of her realm, and she wanted to know what they were experiencing every place that she went. So I feel like part of her life's work was to make sure that she could make the plight of the women in the realm better. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that definitely would have been a reason for her to have a sticking point with this decision, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So we're just going to focus, because we want to kind of avoid too many potential spoilers, and also we don't know what's relevant because we haven't seen the show yet. We're going to focus on the two main kids who are really important because they ended up in this battle over the succession. So Prince Aemon Targaryen married Lady Jocelyn Baratheon and had a daughter named Rhaenys, who is going to be in the show. We're very excited. We talked about her last week. She mm-hmm. is known as the Queen Who Never Was. And Prince Aemon died in a battle with pirates. That's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Damn.
His brother, Prince Balon Targaryen, was named immediately by his father as the heir, which, you know, skipped over Rhaenys immediately. But then he also died before ascending to the throne, leaving two sons, Viserys and Daemon, two of the major figures in at least what this first season of House of the Dragon. When Aemon died, his father skipped over Rhaenys in the line of succession. And that is one of the two main fights that Jaehaerys and Alysanne had. And it was just another like painful reminder that it didn't matter what the birth order was, that they would always skip over the woman. So Rhaenys is the most recent woman who was next in line to the throne to be passed over for a weaker claim. We talked about Rhaena being passed over for her brothers. And she was married to Corlys Velaryon, the sea snake. Paul's favorite character.
My favorite. Let's go.
And she's also, remember, a Baratheon on her mother's side. Jocelyn Baratheon was her mother. So both of those families are really salty about the fact that Rhaenys is passed over to be queen.
I mean, what the realm could have had? She is a Targaryen. She's a Baratheon, bringing back together the houses that first did this conquering. And she's marrying a Velaryon, who was one of the vassal houses who helped them defeat and conquer the realm. Like, what they could have had in this royal family when they walk in with all that gold on and those dreads glistening on 2-3 of them. I'm just saying what they lost out. Rhaenys was like, yo, y'all are losing out right now. Oh, yeah.
So after Prince Balon died, Jaehaerys was like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Because I already had said that I already skipped over Rhaenys to make Balon the next heir, and then he dies. So rather than make a choice, he decided to call this great council of 101. AC. We won't get into too many details, but, you know, basically this was a democratic, almost let's not get too crazy here because the small folk were not represented. But the Westerosi lords were invited to come, and like so many of them came, that the castle, which was Harrenhal, was like bursting at the seams. Because, you know, they all have to come with a big entourage. And they selected the new heir. So
don't they think that Harrenhal was a bad place to do this? That this was like, this is, I mean, when you really think about the history of this castle to this point, I know Harren the Black spent a lot of time building it, and it may have had some accommodations that made sense. But I mean, this was the very first place in which this was like, he got wrecked. This is just a bad omen for like your house. Like, let's pick the heir in the one place where the king got washed like super quickly.
Yeah, I think people look at Harrenhal as neutral ground.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it gets selected a lot. It's also like not smack in the middle of the kingdoms, but I guess for some folks, it's a more central location than others. It's a cursed castle.
Let's call nothing it and ever it's cursed. Good comes out of Harrenhal.
It's yeah, exactly. So I don't think anyone will find this to be a spoiler, because Prince Viserys is chosen. He is the king in House of the Dragon. We know that. And the events of the Dance of Dragons unfolds from there. I do think it would be really interesting to see how this council is demonstrated on screen, because I think it seemed like such a chaotic mess of politicking. Mm-hmm. And also, I think there were something like 19 claimants or something. There were just people coming out of the woodwork here saying that they were Targaryens and they had a claim. So I think that it will be interesting to see how it's depicted on screen. Jaehaerys's accomplishments and legacy is, you know, a few like, you know, administrative things. He was a very administrative minded guy. The unified book of laws, because apparently there was none.
Crazy.
They were just kind of keeping track of the laws as they saw fit. The roads for the kingdom, including the king's road, that wasn't a thing. And, you know, Paul had mentioned that Queen Alysanne held these women's courts whenever she visited another keep or a region. And because of the women's courts, they abolished first knight's rights, which was the right of, you know, a vassal lord to visit upon the new wife of one of his tenants. So
visit in air quotes. There was like dude just like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go over to this wedding because like they're getting married and that means I can like have sex with the lady before, like that's
it's wild. Horrible. Horrible, brutal, disgusting tradition. And Jaehaerys and Alysanne made it illegal.
So here we are. We're a week, well, not even a week, 4 days away from the premiere of House of the Dragon.
Crazy.
So, I mean, you've had all this recap. You've had all this history. We've tried to lay out as much as we can without spoiling things that we think may come up in the show. How excited are you about this show, Andrew?
I couldn't be more excited. We've been waiting for this for so long, even though we've been waiting for it, you know, with anger in our hearts. We have let go of the past. We are ready to move on. We are hyped about this new show. I cannot believe it's here.
It's really cool. I mean, rereading all of this content, it just makes you remember why you fell in love with this world and this story in the first place. You know, rereading the history of Westeros, and then reading Fire and Blood, and then watching Game of Thrones episodes again, and you know, like, outside of everybody having the same name, I think I'm pretty happy.
Yeah.
I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, I'm salty about the name thing, but I hope I can get over it.
There's so many, and for all you people who've been listening, be like, man, there's another Aemon. We're not talking about Maester Aemon. We're not talking about that. There's a lot of Aemons and a lot of Aegons.
Yeah.
And a lot of Rhaenys and a lot of Rhaenyras. It's a lot.
Yeah. It's going to be fun to keep track of them.
I guess the monarchies did that in our world, too. You got to appreciate... I mean, there was Elizabeth I, Elizabeth II. You got to appreciate Elizabeth II, right? Just being like, hey, keep it simple. Use my name. It's all our crown, folks. Just use my name. That's what it is. But that is going to do it for us for this episode. And we are going to be covering the first episode of House of the Dragon next week. You will get an episode and we will, we'll talk about it. And so please feel free to reach out to us, leave reviews at any of the places where you listen to podcasts. You can also reach out to us at KinFolklorePod on Instagram, KinFolklorePod on Twitter. Join our Facebook group, KinFolklore. We're happy and we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.